we will receive will be more than worth the walk.
Clarissa pointed off into the distance.
There it is, just behind that rise.
The companions continued on, followed tirelessly by Shiva and her group of muties, like seagulls trailing behind a ship, hoping to catch something churned up by its wake. When they reached the rise, JB stopped abruptly and grabbed Clarissa by the arm.
I don't see anything here. If you double-cross us, it'll be the last thing you ever do.
No double-cross! You wanted to go someplace safe, so I'm bringing you to my home. Or at least the place I've been living these past few months.
JB let go of her arm with a remorseful look, but decided to wait to see what he'd find before mouthing an apology.
But there's nothing here.
Nothing on the surface, but there's plenty underground. Follow me.
Again, the friends placed their trust in their female guide. When they reached the bottom of the rise, they came upon a concrete kiosk in the middle of the field.
This looks like the place where we arrived.
Same, but different.
There was a door on one side of the kiosk. Clarissa opened it and gestured to the four friends.
After you, boys.
What is this?
An entrance to a water tunnel.
Where does it lead?
To one of the power plants downriver. I can't be sure which one, since most of them aren't operating anymore, and to find out I'd have to walk some 5 miles in the dark. I figured it's not that important.
JB followed the other three friends inside.
What about the muties?
They're content to wait for me outside at the entrance until I reappear in the morning.
I must say, that is an excellent security measure.
She closed the door and made sure it was locked. The tunnel was indeed dark. Once the door was closed, JB couldn't see his hands, even when he held them directly in front of his face.
Anyone have a gas lighter?
In answer, a small point of light came on to JB's left, illuminating Jack's pale figure. But a moment later, another, much brighter light came on in the tunnel when Clarissa twisted a plastic connector knob onto the ends of two wires.
There's a few live wires around the falls. You just have to know where to look, and not use so much that Baron Fox would notice someone is stealing juice from him.
Wow!
Dean's neck craned to take in the enormous size of the tunnel.
Wow, indeed.
Big.
They were standing at the bottom of a huge concrete tunnel that was roughly 50 or 60 feet across and stretched out in both directions for what seemed like forever. It was like a redoubt, JB thought, but the tunnel was completely cylindrical, like a blaster barrel, and there seemed to be no end to it.
And this carried water to the power stations downriver?
When there was water to be carried there.
But despite it being dry, there was still a soft wash of sound echoing through the tunnel, as if the river's ghost still haunted the caverns beneath the city.
Now it's just a safe place to sleep.
Ah, to sleep. Perchance to dream. An excellent idea.
What is?
Doc ignored the smirks he received from JB and Dean in reaction to Clarissa's response to his colorful use of language.
Sleep, my dear.
Oh, be my guest.
She had transformed a section of the tunnel into a living space, with several sleeping places made of grasses and twigs. The companions settled in. The food in the cafeteria was as good as one would expect from a farm. The soup and stew had both been made fresh, and Ryan was amazed to find real bits of meat floating around in both. He took a seat on a bench at one of the tables near the exit, and Brody sat with him. When they'd left the showers, there had been plenty of activity among the SecMen as they disposed of Purvis's body and cleaned the showers for the next crew coming in. Ryan wondered why they didn't get the slaves to do the job for them, but figured it was easy to keep the man's death secret from the Baron if they handled the problem themselves.
Nobody will miss Purvis. But if the Baron catches wind of what happened, he might want an explanation. They'll tell him the man slipped on some soap, and that'll be the end of it.
Ryan gave Brody a wink and shrugged mockingly.
But that's what happened.
You'll do all right here, Ryan.
Halfway through the meal, Mildred came and joined Ryan, sitting across the table from him. Grateful for her presence, Ryan gave her a quick hug, but noticed that she had no tray in front of her.
Aren't you eating anything?
Mildred ran a hand over her stomach and smiled.
Nursery workers get fed first. And best. I didn't think I'd ever eat steak again.
Steak? I think I need to apply to Fox Farm Medical School.
Brody quickly broke up the friend's jocularity by grabbing Mildred's hands.
How is...
Brody hesitated, looking around to see if any Sekhmen were listening.
How is Jasmine?
Mildred looked surprised.
Is she a friend of yours?
Mildred, allow me to introduce Brody. He's the maid of the woman you took to the nursery.
Mildred nodded in understanding, taking her hands back from the man.
Ah, pleased to meet you. Jasmine's fine. It was tough going for a while, but she's doing real well now.
And the baby?
It's a bouncing baby boy.
Brody smiled.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not supposed to have attachments to the children born here.
I don't care. He's my son, and he's not going to be sold into slavery or traded away for some supplies for the vill.
Mildred looked over at Ryan.
He's right. The baby was taken from the mother and is now being taken care of by someone else in the nursery. I found out that when the baby's 6 months old, he'll be shipped off to a family down south.
No, I can't let that happen.
Brody was obviously heartbroken.
But you knew that would happen.
It doesn't matter if I knew. That's my boy, my flesh and blood. I told myself 1,000 times that this would happen, that we'd lose him, and I tried to prepare for it. But nothing can prepare you for losing your child like that.
Mildred reached over and held Brody's hand again. Ryan looked at the man, understanding a little of what he was going through. Ryan himself had gone through life in the Deathlands, never knowing of the son he had. But then, just days after meeting the 10-year-old child for the first time, there had been a bond between them that grew stronger every day. Brody's bond with his newborn was being broken against his will, and it hurt the man deeply.
You may be reunited with your woman and your son yet. In a couple of days, this whole place is going to be turned upside down.
Brody shook his head in despair and gestured toward Ryan and Mildred.
What are you talking about? Who's going to do it? You two?
Either us or help from outside, or both.
You mean there were more out there with you?
4 more men.
Brody's smile was wide and bright.
I'll help you then. Whatever you need, I'll see that you get it.
Right now, Brody, I need you to stay strong. Do it for your son.
Mildred nodded in agreement. For the first time in his life, Brody felt hope rising in him.
You got it.
There was a knock at Christie's door.
What?
The door opened, and a short, heavy bull of a Sekhman entered the room.
The Baron wants you to join him in the cafeteria in 20 minutes.
Fine.
And he wants you to wear this.
The Sekhman's lips pulled back to reveal a smile full of black holes and broken teeth. In his grimy hand was what looked like a few slips of black fabric.
What's that?
It's what the Baron wants you to wear.
But what is it?
Clothes for a gaudy slut.
And he thinks I'm going to wear them?
That's right. He's going to parade you around to the slaves as his new prize.
And if I don't put on the clothes?
He said I could have you myself.
The Sekhman's big, beefy tongue slobbered over his bruised and swollen bottom lip.
So, if you don't want to put it on, I think maybe we should stop wasting time and get right down to business.
Christie considered her options. There was no way she'd let this foul creature lay a finger on her. But even if she resisted all his advances, there'd be 3 more Sekhmen outside the door, all too eager to help him.
Oh, give the damn things to me and wait outside.
The Sekhman looked disappointed, but handed over the clothes. Reluctantly, he left the room. The workers cleared their food trays and sat back down in their seats in anticipation for the entertainment portion of the evening. The lights in the cafeteria were turned down low, while the lights on the stage at one end of the room were turned up bright. The man everyone knew as Norman Bower stepped up to a podium, and the room slowly grew quiet.
We're in for a special treat tonight. Instead of our usual show, Baron Fox himself has a special surprise for us.
Everyone stopped what they were doing and directed their focus onto the stage.
And now, here he is, the giver of all good things, the heir to the great man's fortune, Baron Fox!
The Baron walked out on stage with Christie in tow.
Christie, you know her?
That's his mate. She was captured with us, but the Baron seemed to take a shine to her.
Ryan turned to Mildred.
What the hell is she wearing?
I believe that's what we used to call ho-threads.
Indeed. Christy was sporting the shortest shorts Ryan had ever seen, with a similarly minuscule top that barely hit her breasts. It was accented with